It seems that conversations about education in our state generally center on one refrain: STEM. STEM classes, STEM careers. All of that focus on science, technology, engineering, and math seems to have crowded out the arts. Indeed, the Michigan Merit Curriculum now requires only one credit of an arts class for a high school diploma, arguably freeing up students to take more math or science. But a new Michigan State University study may force us to take a fresh look at the value of those arts classes, at the piano lessons, the band practice. Researchers found a startling link between taking part in arts activities as a child with patents received or businesses launched as an adult. And just wait till you hear how STEM graduates are linked to musical training. Joining us now is one of the authors of the study. Rex Lamore directs the MSU Center for Community and Economic Development. Welcome to the program, Rex.
Thank you, Cynthia. Pleasure to be with you today.
And speaking of Cynthia's, it's my pleasure to welcome Cynthia Taggart, who's a professor of music education at Michigan State. Good to have you with us, Cynthia.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Rex, I want to start with your study focusing on this group of MSU Honors College grads who major in STEM subjects. And you looked at a group from 1990 to 1995. What questions were you trying to answer?
Well, we were interested in trying to understand who are the inventive, creative people in our society, those individuals who start innovative businesses or generate innovative patents that result in job creation, business formation, and wealth generation in our communities. And so we looked at these Honors College grads from 90 to 95 who had majored in the science, technology, and engineering. And we had seen from some previous work of one of our colleagues, Dr. Robert Root Bernstein, in physiology, that he had noted through anecdotal studies that highly creative individuals, Nobel Prize laureates, for example, had what he called, they were polymaths. They do many things. They're a scientist and they're a poet. They're an artist and they're a chemist. And so we wanted to see if that dualistic characteristic also played itself out with these groups of highly creative individuals. So we asked them questions: have you started a business? Have you generated a patent? Have you created any other creative activities through articles or books published? And then we asked them their level of participation in arts and crafts throughout their life as children, as young adults, and mature adults.
And what did you find that surprised you the most?
Well, I think what we found that surprised us the most was the role of sustained participation in the arts in those that were inventors, started a business, generated a patent. We found that they were more likely to have been engaged in the arts through their lifespan. Then we found, of course, that they started as young children, they continued as young adults, and then they continued it in their professional lives. Whereas some of their colleagues who perhaps weren't quite as creative, maybe they started as a child, but they stopped when they went to college. And so this issue of sustained participation as performers or engaged artists seemed to be critical in producing inventors and innovators.
It really struck me as I looked through the study that you found 93% of the STEM graduates had reported musical training as compared to only 34% of average adults. And Cynthia Taggart, you're a longtime music educator, and this study seems to say that unlike the way we approach it, where it seems these days it's either or, either you embrace the STEM path or you're on an arts path, this study seems to say it should be a case of and, STEM and arts.
That's exactly right. And I found it so interesting that the sustained piece was such an important part of Rex's study. For me, it's really compelling that there are some kids who have the potential to be better at the arts than anything else in their lives, and they need that opportunity to study the arts. And to deny them access to that in education is a real travesty. But there are lots of good extrinsic reasons for studying as well, like those that Professor Lamore found.
But we do spend a lot of time, it seems, talking about arts education in terms of how it relates to other fields, like we're doing right now. And you make a good point, Cynthia. We're missing out by not paying attention to arts education for its own sake, aren't we?
Yeah, and in fact, I think a lot of the people who have sort of made the arts their lives find that the intrinsic reasons for studying the arts are the most important, because those are the things that have brought us joy and fulfillment in terms of engaging in the arts. with the arts being sort of a different way of thinking and experiencing and interacting with the world. They're kind of what make us human in a way.
What is happening when, let's say, music becomes a part of a youngster's experience? What actually happens in their brains that gives them that boost in the STEM careers? Do we know that?
We have some information about that in terms of the synaptic connections that get formed in the brain. I think it makes the brain wire in a different way than if they hadn't had those kinds of music engagements. And music engages not just the right side of the brain, as was believed a long time ago, but it really engages the whole brain and in different ways for different kinds of musical engagement.
That was Cynthia Taggart I'm speaking with, a professor of music education at Michigan State University, and she is joined by Rex Lamore from the Faculty of Urban and Regional Planning, who directs the MSU Center for Community and Economic Development. And he was part of a study that found a startling link between being a part in arts and crafts activities as a youngster with patents received or businesses launched as an adult. And Rex, these people who are inventing, who are winning patents, talk to us some more about what they mean for rebuilding our state's economy.
Well, if you think about the implications here, science plus math results in what you might consider a technician. But what we really want, if we're intent on competing in the global economy, we want that inventor, that science plus math plus that creative capacity that generates that new product that, you know, people, the market will beat a path to your door. And they're the job creators, the wealth generators that allow us to enjoy a certain level of quality of life. And so the question is, who are those creators, those inventors, and what are the characteristics of them? So you can go beyond just trying to attract them to your community to perhaps creating them within your community by creating the environment to allow those inventive and creative people to grow and prosper. Then, you know, you're able to create jobs and generate wealth within your community.
Rex, talk to us a little more. I know you say you're looking at having this study out for the economic policymakers to review and study it. What do you hope will happen from the results of this study?
Well, part of what we're wanting to understand is inventive and creative work environments where new ideas and problems are solved. Do they provide opportunities for people to practice their arts and crafts? And, you know, as a simple analogy, many work environments have coffee rooms or break rooms. Might they also have art and creative rooms where workers who are involved in thoughtful and problem-solving activities have a chance to take a break, go paint, play their guitar, practice their poetry, whatever their particular artistic inclinations are, you know, take a break, and then come back to work. We're also looking at the giving of businesses, high growth, high wage, highly competitive businesses. Do they give to the arts, recognizing that many of them may have been participating in the arts as young adults and children, now mature adults? Do they return the gifts back to their community?
Cynthia, the Lansing School District was one of many forced to make drastic cuts in their arts and electives, and I know you were very outspoken about trying to fight to maintain that curriculum for students in Lansing. But here's the question. It costs money to have a school orchestra and to have a band and to offer music lessons as part of a school curriculum. How do you think financially strapped school districts could accomplish this even if they wanted to?
Well, it is a difficult question, and I think that our politicians are going to need to make some tough choices so that the schools in this country have the funding that they need in order to function. But I think the way definitely not to do it is to eliminate some programs and not others. We need to find a balance so that we're really developing the entire person, really in order for our democracy to work. We need to have all types of voices and thinkers at the table. So kind of it's, for me, it's a matter of social justice. The music programs are being eliminated in the school systems that have the students that are coming from the lower socioeconomic statuses, typically urban districts.
Mm-hmm.
And making the problem even worse is that those families also are financially stressed, and so they have the least access to arts instruction outside of the school. They can't afford it. Transportation's a problem. There are fees required to participate. So as a result, the education gap sort of continues to widen between the haves and the have-nots. So it really needs to be part of our school systems. It really needs to be part of education K-12 because that sustained piece of it is so important.
That was Cynthia Taggart. She's a professor of music education at Michigan State University, and she was joined by Rex Lamore, who's with the Faculty of Urban and Regional Planning, and he directs the MSU Center for Community and Economic Development. Thank you so much to both of you for joining us and giving us a lot to think about with arts education.
Thank you, Cynthia.
You.